Hello, and welcome to the Chengdu Gaming Federation podcast. My name is Charlie, and I'm joined here again with Austin.
Hey.
Today, we're going to be talking about the Nintendo Switch and two of the biggest games which are on the Switch, which are probably...
1-2 Switch.
Yeah, as snipper clips. Yeah, probably the two games which are in contention for Game of the Year, I'd say. I think that the front runners for Game of the Year for 2017 are going to be Mario Odyssey, and it's going to be Zelda Breath of the Wild.
Yeah.
We've been watching the Switch kind of from the sidelines for a long time, for about 6 months since it launched. And we previously recorded a podcast on Zelda already, and we kind of talked a little bit about Breath of the Wild as you just started to play it on the Wii U.
Yeah.
And about 2 weeks ago, I got a Switch. I just completely broke down and...
You could not play Mario.
Well, I purchased it. It's just completely impulse purchase. Mario Odyssey was out, and I was just like, screw it. I'm just going to go pay what it costs and buy the game right now and have it like within an hour. And that's exactly what I did.
And you've been using the Switch a lot. I definitely think you've been getting your money's worth.
Well, man, yeah, I'll talk about that. So, but it's been about 2 weeks with the Switch, so I have a lot of first impressions on that. I know that the Switch has not been... it's not a new device. It's been out for just over 6 months now, I think. So some people may already be familiar with the Switch. But now that we're coming on the end of the year, I think there's going to be a lot of discussion about Mario versus Zelda and how the two compare and kind of comparing and contrasting them. And this is a good opportunity to kind of talk about that and also talk about the Switch in general and kind of the future of the Switch. I think it's pretty interesting to look at what the future prospect of the Switch is and how it compares to the PlayStation 4, the PlayStation 4 Pro, and now the Xbox One S and the Xbox One X.
Right.
And so, yeah, let's do that. Let's start it off with Zelda. You've been playing Zelda for a long time.
Yeah, I mean, I've been playing it a lot. Started playing again quite a bit, other than PUBG. That's like been my go-to game.
Yes.
And you've been hitting me up, asking me about things in the game and stuff since you've started playing it. I'm still struggling to beat it. There's so much to do and so much to explore.
You kind of previously said that you think Zelda Breath of the Wild is one of the best games you've ever played. So is it safe to assume that it's game of the year for you?
Yeah, probably.
I think PUBG is like one of the other contenders for game of the year. I think that outside of Mario and Zelda, I think like PUBG is PlayerUnknown's Battleground is the top contender for a game to win that.
Yeah, but just sheer numbers of people playing, those like fun moments you have, and it's... But it's so different from Zelda, and it just lacks the polish that Zelda has.
It really does. Yeah. It's an innovative game. It's an influential game. It's kind of, it's a really hot game. Our last podcast was about PUBG, so we talked at great length about that game. But where is Zelda for you in terms of the previous Zelda games you've played and just the games you played this year?
I mean, Zelda... I'll have to make it all the way through to the end to really like be clear. But I mean, I'm thinking it might be like one of my favorite games of all time.
I don't think I've ever really played a game like Zelda.
Yeah,
I think the closest thing to it might be The Witcher 3, which is also just a massively open adventure, you know, role-playing game.
I mean, the last time I played a game that I enjoyed exploring like this was Red Dead Redemption. There is that like treasure hunt that you do in the game where you have to like kind of just decipher pictures to and that like reminds me of like the Sheikah slate and those pictures from 100 years before, and you just like have visual clues to be like, I think maybe that's like south of the castle.
Yeah, I think one big different thing is that in Witcher 3, I feel like, and I didn't finish the game, but I played the game for maybe 15 hours.
I haven't played it, so I played Witcher 1, which is vastly different.
So Witcher 3 is a big open world, but in general, you pretty much know where you're going for most of the game. You're not really like just kind of going off into the wilderness to try to like see what you find.
Right.
At least I didn't really do any of that. I mean, when you look at the map, it's pretty much populated with like, this is where you want to go. And like, this is where the side quests are. And it's all like pretty clearly labeled.
Right. And you just know what you're doing. It feels linear, even though it's an open world.
Right. And then that's sharply contrasted with Zelda, where in Zelda I have like no idea.
Yeah, I mean, you've encountered divine beasts that I haven't encountered yet, you know?
Yeah.
Like I've only defeated two of the divine beasts, and yeah, I mean, it's just such a, I don't know, it really does not, I've never played a game that just didn't hold your hand in the way that game does. And
did you play Skyrim?
No, I played Oblivion.
Yeah, me neither. I think Skyrim is kind of a similar thing, yeah. But I can't compare those two, unfortunately, because I didn't play the game much.
I have it, just never played it.
Right, yeah, I assumed you had it.
But
I found the open world nature of it to be sometimes frustrating also.
Yeah.
Especially when you're dying a lot and you don't really know where to go. And the story in Zelda is like not really pulling me towards any kind of resolution. I think that existing and surviving in the world is a really attractive reward in itself.
I mean, I'm enjoying the story, but it's not the like biggest aspect of the game. I think the world itself is like the meat of the game.
Yeah, I don't think the story like really has much pull at all. Like I don't really care that much about like what happens to the narrative and like who is the princess and why am I saving her. I mean, I only know these things because I've been playing Zelda for a long time.
Yeah.
It's not like Breath of the Wild has set up any interesting, you know, narrative conflicts, which I really want to see resolved.
I mean, there are a few things in the story so far that I've seen that are interesting and fun. And it's nice. It's kind of cool having it voice acted for the first time. And the cutscenes are well produced. They look good. It's just, it's not the main thing of the game. I think a lot more of the story is just like exploring the world and getting to know the world and the characters that exist in the world, rather than the advancement of the narrative of the game.
It's pretty unusual. I mean, in Mario Odyssey, there's not really much of a story beyond the typical, you know, save the princess in the castle Mario story. But I feel like in that type of game, it's a 3D action platformer. You don't expect a story in that.
I expect the story, yeah.
Yeah, exactly. But in Zelda Breath of the Wild, like, I feel like you would expect a story in that.
Right.
So, but anyway, the environment of just the world itself is so compelling.
It's beautiful.
Yeah, it's beautiful. Yeah. Just the way that it works is really captivating and kind of breathtaking. I heard them describe it as open air. It's an open air game. I think the idea is that you can go up to high mountain peaks and then like paraglide down, and like this feeling of like having it be open air, you know,
well,
it's like
I
a good descriptor.
One issue with a lot of open world games and things like, say, Assassin's Creed or something where you climb a tower and then all of a sudden this area is open to you and your whole map becomes overloaded with all these icons and you just have like a checklist of things to do, basically. And it's kind of overwhelming and not that exciting either.
Do you not have that situation in Zelda now? Because I do.
No, so Zelda, for me at least so far, is like I go to a new area. My first thing is to look for a tower, go to the tower, and then kind of survey the area and think about what to do next in that area.
My map is like filled with points which I've created for like shrines that
yeah,
I can see, but I don't know how to get to.
You're creating them. You know, it's not like, I mean,
it's not that different, though,
you need
to look at a map with like
as
a bunch of...
As opposed to like Assassin's Creed, where immediately your map is just like tons of things. Whereas like Zelda, I mean, you're choosing to like add these things to your map and then not do them. I found like the best thing to do in the game and to progress is to be focused and goal-driven and do one thing at a time and like not move from that task until you've completed it. Or given up on it for now.
Yeah, I don't find that. For me, it hasn't worked out like that. I just find a shrine. I give it a shot for like 20 minutes. I can't figure it out. I leave a point on there, and then I go into the next thing. That's happened to me probably in 4 or 5 shrines. And I've also discovered some shrines, which I don't know how to get to, or I can't get to yet. So my map is, I mean, it's such a big world. There's so much to do. And
I mean, at first,
there's a lot of like, loose ends for me to like tie up to like eventually return to complete the shrines.
Well, when I first started playing, I would just be like, you have like the 5 markers you can set on your map, and then you can set stamps or pins or whatever you call them. And when I first started playing, I was just, oh, there's a tower, there's a tower, there's a tower. You're out of like, you have 5, you know, of the colored ones you can set. And I quickly realized like, some of these towers are so far away, maybe like I'm sidetracked or like taken away from it well before like I get even close to it. So like I found it best to like try to focus your efforts within like one area, one like zone of the map, and it doesn't get as overwhelming.
What do you think the future of Zelda looks like? Do you think that there's going to be another Zelda game based on the Breath of the Wild engine on the Switch?
That's tough to say, man. Like, I mean, Wind Waker and Twilight Princess were like vastly different.
But Majora's Mask was based on the
Ocarina of Time. That's true. That's like the only game in the series, though, that they did that. And they're releasing DLC with additional story for Breath of the Wild.
Yeah, actually, so the second DLC pack just came out, I think, yesterday.
Oh, November really?
November 10th. Yeah.
Right on. So, like, that, I think, is going to be the extent of what we see in this game. They might release another game in the engine, but, I mean, I don't know. Nintendo, I don't think, is going to put out another Zelda game for few years at least. Yeah. At least not on the Switch.
Right. I think that makes sense. I think there will be another Zelda game.
There might be another Zelda game on the Switch, but not for like, you know, 2 or 3 years.
Yeah, I think like 2020 or something like that. Sounds about like the right time.
I mean, they've got Metroid coming out soon. They just put out Mario, and like Nintendo does not, you know, bang out like titles every year like Call of Duty or something.
Well, they do this year.
Yeah.
This year has been out of control for Nintendo.
Yeah, I think a huge part of that, though, is that Zelda, you know, was originally going to be a Wii U game.
Yeah, it was just because of the failure of the Wii U that they decided to
move it to the Switch.
And yeah, exactly.
Obviously wanted to have Mario on the Switch. So I think it's like a circumstantial thing that we're seeing like two of their biggest IPs being released around the same time.
Yeah, Zelda Breath of the Wild was originally unveiled in 2013. So we know that it's been in development for at least 4 years.
Yeah.
I mean, it had to be longer than that because it was already shown in 2013.
So it's probably like 6 years or something.
That sounds about right. And the Wii U, do you know when that came out? The Wii U's been out for a long time.
It's been out for a minute.
Yeah, it's been out for a long time, a number of years. I think it's conceivable that Mario Odyssey was also planned for the Wii U. And that was eventually moved on to the Switch as well. And that has become the first really killer Switch exclusive. And I think that is driving an epic number of Switch sales right now.
That makes me want a Switch. I mean, I would prefer to be playing Zelda on the Switch and be able to just like pick up and play wherever.
Sure. Yeah, we got a lot of... I mean, I bought the Switch just because of Mario. We got a friend who just today bought a Switch because of Mario.
Yeah.
Several other people in the CGF WeChat group have bought Switches in the last week, just in the time since Mario Odyssey has come out. So
I am very tempted to get one, but maybe later.
Well, let's move on to Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
So I've been playing this game daily for about 10 days. I think I got it pretty much right on release day or within
like... You got it the day after, I think. You wanted to, but it was... you had things going on.
Yeah, and things going on that day. Right. But I got the game almost immediately upon release. And for about 3 days, I played it continuously. And I just kind of raced through the story.
Yeah.
You can spend a lot of time in each of the kingdoms that they're called.
Yeah.
And looking for
how many kingdoms are there?
I think there are about 16.
I heard that like some of them are kind of like semi like dupe. Like there's a couple water levels or things like that. They're not like totally original.
So, I mean, like a water level is not that original. Like there are water levels, like the snow level is like not that original. Like we've seen those in like a lot of Mario games, right? Some of them are like entirely original, like the Luncheon Kingdom, which is like a lunch cafeteria theme. So there are some like really weird, like out there ideas. And the game is just so damn innovative and also referential. You know, it's like references every single point of the Mario history.
Yeah.
It references the original Super Mario Brothers, Super Donkey Mario Kong. World. Yeah, the original arcade game where Mario was first introduced, which is Donkey Kong. Mario 64. I mean, at every single point of Mario's history, there is a reference to that inside Mario Odyssey.
It's like a love letter to the older Mario titles while building upon what they already have been.
Exactly. Yeah. I think if it was just a love letter alone, I think that would be deeply satisfying. I think there's a massive audience just for that.
But
the reason why this game, I think, is getting like 10 out of 10s from almost everybody is because it's not only just a love letter, but it also pushes into new exciting territory and really says that Nintendo still hasn't made like the best Mario game yet. Like, this is maybe the best Mario game ever made out of the last 30 plus years, which some of the best games ever made ever arguably are Nintendo, Mario games. So it's pretty remarkable. It took me maybe 12 hours or 15 hours or so to get through the story. And
I've heard that like the real ending, you have to get like 500 moons or whatever. They're moons, right?
Yeah, they're moons. So I'm not really sure how that works. Basically, there is a standard story, and I'm not going to spoil it for you or for people who listen to this who haven't played it before, but there's a pretty satisfying story. There are some gameplay, you know, mechanics which are introduced at certain points along the story, which are super exciting.
Yeah.
And one of those you played, which is where you're in the
like 2D, like,
there's a lot of those. Yeah. It's in New Donk City, which is like the Donkey Kong New York City kind of setting. And that's probably, from what I've seen people say and write about Super Mario Odyssey, that seems to be everybody's favorite kingdom, is Mario in New Donk City, which is like this real life, like Earth kind of city.
Yeah.
And all the people are like normal humans, and Mario's just like this like tiny little midget guy, like jumping around on top of them. Like,
and that, you can like ride a scooter around and stuff, right?
Yeah, yeah. You can climb the skyscrapers.
Like swing around on street posts and stuff.
Yeah, like, super, super cool.
Parkour.
Yeah, this stage is probably the most memorable one out of Super Mario Odyssey, but there are so many. I mean, the game is so damn good. When you get to the end of the game, I don't think this is really a spoiler, but when you get to the end of the game, there are these cubes, like some kind of cube, which appears in every one of the kingdoms. Mm. And then you go return to the kingdoms again, and then you get to this cube, and then that releases like a huge number of moons into the kingdom that you're in. So I think that Nintendo maybe could have improved Super Mario Odyssey marginally by making the presence of these cubes clear from the beginning of the game.
Right.
I'm glad that I didn't spend a ton of time just going through everything in the kingdoms as I was going through the game. And the reason why is because if you were to do that, there are still a ton of moons which are going to be released when you finish the game, but at that stage before you finish, they're not there. So you're kind of exploring a world which is like missing a lot of
moons. There's like 800 or 900 moons or something.
Yeah, there's over 800, I think, is what I've heard. And I finished the game with about 140 moons, I think, something like that.
And the gameplay is like really satisfying, and you're not necessarily playing for the story alone, as you said. So,
well, I mean, it actually shares a lot with Zelda Breath of the Wild in that it's a pretty big world, obviously not as big as Zelda, but
I mean, you still wanted to play after you completed the game, like the story.
Oh, right? totally. So, I mean, each one of the kingdoms is like a playground of like all these like fun things to just like mess with, right? So most of the time that you spend is just like you encounter something which is interesting and you're like, oh, how does this work? And maybe you can, you know, the key mechanic of Super Mario Odyssey is throwing the hat, which is called Cappy, onto objects and enemies, and then you can control them. And there are hundreds of things which you can control with this. And some of these things, like one of them is like a slab of meat. one of them is like a manhole. You know, you can like move the manhole. Yeah. There's like all, you can control a Christmas tree, you know, and the tree just like hops around.
Yeah, I saw that like, in Donkey.
Yeah, yeah, right. So there's all these like just wacky, really enjoyable things that you can control.
Right.
And so a lot of the enjoyment of the game is just exploring all these things. And each of the kingdoms are filled with all these like little nooks and crannies with all these small little surprises. And now that I've been returning to the kingdoms, which I finished before, and like finding all these other moons, I'm discovering that there's like so many other layers of depth to all the kingdoms, which I didn't even see
right.
or observe as I was going through the game,
yeah.
just like on an objective.
And there's like basis. Multiple ways you can go about doing things, right?
So yeah, for like- sure. What I've noticed in particular is that online there, I mean, immediately upon the release of Super Mario Odyssey, there were YouTube clips of people doing just like ridiculous acrobatic stunts with Cappy.
Yeah.
So you can do like a triple jump and then throw the cap and then bounce off the cap and then do a spin and then throw the cap again and then bounce off the cap. You just stuff like this.
Yeah.
And you can jump like ridiculous distances. Yeah. And also like jump really high up. And so there are YouTube clips of people finding just like outrageous things. I mean, just doing like crazy acrobatic stunts to get up on top of something, which yeah. looks impossibly high. And then when you get up there, there's like coins
a moon
up there.
There.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. Like there's something up there and you're just like, oh my God, the developers knew that
people
would
were
be doing.
Doing
yeah,
crazy.
They knew that yeah. they would do all of this. Like yeah. it's really incredible that they were able to forecast like how people would play the game and then to design the game around that.
Yeah.
There's just so much attention to detail. It seems very clear that they spent just years and years and years thinking about every possibility of what people would do in this game.
And then
game.
Rewarding them for doing it.
Yeah, yeah. And there are just so many small little details in the game. Like one which I found which was really cool is if you don't move Mario for a while, he'll just lay down on the ground and then he'll go to sleep. And he starts like snoring. And then a bird will come over and land on his nose. And in each kingdom, it's a different bird.
Oh, that's kind of a small but really cool detail.
Yeah, that's just an example. Like, there's a ton of things like that. There's like yeah. a lot of little small details which are just so carefully considered and just make you think like, man, like Mario, you know, Nintendo is like so far ahead of everyone else in terms of thinking of these things.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. It's really difficult to think, or I mean, almost impossible to think of a game developer now who has a reputation for going to that level of depth
yeah.
as far as like thinking about like everything that any player would possibly do and just adding all these like really kind of unnecessary details, which when you find them really enrich
just add
the experience.
To the charm and like overall it just feelings towards the game. Like all those little details really, really build up to something special.
They totally do. So I finished the game with 140 some moons and I learned that there's another stage which is unveiled when you get to 250 moons. So I went back to a couple of the original kingdoms and got those very quickly and got yeah. to 250. And that is the Dark Side of the Moon.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah, there's a moon stage. Now there's a Dark Side of the Moon kingdom. And it's really hard. It's getting really difficult yeah. now. As you know, and going through the actual story is not that difficult. And actually, I've heard this as like a criticism of the game, but I think it's kind of might be unfair criticism because
I think that makes it like more accessible. That like somebody, maybe a young player or something, can come in and feel that like, okay, I did it. I beat the game, you know, and not feel like overwhelmed or whatever. But to someone who really wants to like push their limits or whatever, there's challenge there.
Yeah, it's different from like the original Super Mario Brothers. You know, I mean, the original NES game is really difficult. Like to yeah. finish that game is like something that, you know, when I was a kid and playing Super Mario Brothers, like I don't think I knew anybody who finished the game because yeah. it gets really difficult later on. This game, to finish the story, is not that difficult, especially if you've played like difficult games like, you know, Cuphead or,
yeah.
you know, something like a challenging platformer. But it's really once you finish the story that like the real challenge begins, right?
Right.
So the game is like kind of, I would say you're maybe like at, you know, 33% done with the game when you've yeah. like finished the story. I mean,
maybe even less than that.
Maybe
right?
even less than that. Yeah. I mean, the majority of the game like comes afterwards. So
yeah.
there's a huge amount of depth. And I think now I'm at like 270 moons or something. And then, so I got to get to 500 to get the next thing.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's just a really, really big game, just like Zelda. I mean, with these two games, with Zelda and Mario, and I'm kind of like simultaneously playing them both.
Yeah.
It feels like just, I could be playing just these two games
yeah.
for months and for like 6 months or something, you know?
Yeah, you
and
see why it's taking me so long with Zelda now, right?
Man, it's been yeah. taking you a damn long time.
Yeah. yeah.
How long is this? It's been like
maybe like
five
yeah. months or something. We did take a month in America. Now, had I had the Switch, I would have been playing Zelda during that time when we were in America, especially that like few days of being bedridden, sick, and delusional, that would have been some good Zelda time.
Yeah, so, but moving on to the Switch itself, the Switch came out in March of this year, and Zelda was a launch title.
Yeah.
And I think Zelda was like the main thing, which like really propelled the Switch sales, to like a huge...
Weren't there more Zelda sales than there were actual Switch sales?
Yeah.
It's nuts.
Yeah, I think
collectors or something.
Yeah, so the Zelda has been a massive boon for Nintendo in promoting the Switch like right out of the gate. And so I think the Switch, like upon release, has sold as well as, I mean, almost any console ever. I think like it's been selling extremely fast. It was very difficult to find in the United States for at least 3 months after launch. And I think now it's like not as difficult to find. And most recently, Nintendo has upped their sales estimate for the first fiscal year of sales, which ends in April of 2018, I believe. Mm-hmm. And they've upped that from 10 million units to 14 million units.
Wow.
So that's a pretty significant, aggressive goal to set for Nintendo. And there are rumors now that they've ordered 30 million throughout 2018.
Wow.
So that means they expect the sales of the Switch to go way higher than they have been. You know, they've already been high, but they've been supply constrained.
I mean, hey, like Mario Odyssey coming out, and we've seen, you know, several people, as you say, just buy a Switch just in the past week or two.
Yeah. So, I mean, with these two, and it's, I mean, to see the sales numbers of the Switch is really impressive. But I mean, especially when you consider the context of those sales, in that the Switch is coming into its first holiday season ever.
Yeah.
So the sales are going to
go up.
They're going to be out of control. Yeah. I mean, like starting like right now, like, you know, Thanksgiving is in like 2 weeks.
Yeah.
And after that, I think Switch is going to be like one of the top, you know, Christmas presents, along with the Super Nintendo Mini.
Yeah.
So, but I've been playing a couple other games on Switch as well. I got Sonic Mania the other day.
Oh, you got it.
Yeah, which is really cool. Yeah. It's a $20 eShop purchase, so it's inexpensive. It's actually the same price on Switch as it is on Steam in
on the
China
Chinese store.
Yeah, which I find really shocking because usually
you expect it to be like $10 or something.
Yeah, I expect it to be half as much.
Yeah.
You know, but in this case, I got it on the Switch. And it's just as good as everybody says it is. I mean, it's just really classic.
It's just like, everything that makes Sonic good, right?
Yeah, but actually they've added a lot of new things too, like a lot of new mechanics. Kind of each stage has one new mechanic.
So it's like everything that made Sonic good and then building on it. The same way that like, you know, Mario right now is like just taking, it's like another love letter to the old Sonic games and building upon it, as opposed to like with the 3D
it totally
Sonic
is.
Games have
been. The story of the developer is pretty interesting too. Are you familiar with this guy, Christian Whitehead?
No, but didn't he like start making like custom levels or something, or making the game on his own or something, and Sonic Team picked it up to like work on with him or something?
So he made an unlicensed port of Sonic CD onto the iPhone, and then Sega was aware of what he was doing and then like bought him out or something, like actually published the game which he made and made it like an official Sonic CD on iPhone.
It's pretty cool.
Yeah, pretty cool. So he is just like a really enthusiastic Sonic fan. He's an Australian game developer, indie game developer, and the game has been just really well loved. I mean, just great reviews everywhere. Yeah. And it's interesting also because I don't want to talk about Sonic too long, but Sonic Forces just came out.
Yeah.
And like the reviews for that are really bad.
Terrible.
Yeah. It's another,
it looks bad.
It's another bad 3D Sonic game.
Yeah.
So yeah, it kind of, when Sonic Mania came out, it looked like, hey, maybe Sonic's like back on track.
It's nope.
Like, yeah. Nope. Nope. This is just like a one-off success. But outside of Sonic, there's a lot of good games on the Switch now. There's a ton of games. Stardew Valley is one of the top selling games.
I mean, if you don't have a PC, you know, or like you happen to like playing on the go a lot or whatever, you travel or whatever, there are a ton of great indie games. Shovel Knight, as you mentioned, Stardew Valley, Cave Stories on there with like the definitive Cave Story version now. So
yeah, even like Thumper's on there.
What's Thump? Oh, yeah. Thumper's on there?
Yeah, Thumper's on there.
Wow, that's
interesting. That's another like $20 game.
Yeah.
A lot of these are pretty like inexpensive budget titles.
Yeah. Me, with like a PC and already owning a lot of these games, like Stardew Valley is probably something I wouldn't mind being able to have like a handheld version of it. But like I can't justify necessarily repurchasing it, especially when it's so cheap on Steam.
Yeah, you know, last night actually I was out and someone mentioned Axiom Verge to me. And
Axiom Verge's cool.
That's on Switch as well. That's on Switch too. So there's quite a lot of indie games on here. I think that in terms of consoles, within like the first year of release for the Switch, I think this is more indie games than any console's ever had. This is like really a large quantity. And there's new games like all the time. It's not an indie title, but Doom just came out. Skyrim comes out in like a couple days.
Mm.
And there's just a constant influx of new games on the Switch. So
pretty impressive.
Yeah, it's very encouraging, you know, for like the future of Switch. It looks like the future of the Switch is like really, really bright.
Looking good. Yeah.
Yeah, it's looking really good.
A ton of support. There's like a ton of games on it. It's continuing to grow. Nintendo's going to continue to put out, you know, their own IPs on it, and it looks like they're getting a lot of support from other developers. And if the sales continue, that developer support's going to stay there, which was one of the big issues with the Wii U. There just was not a lot of support for it.
And the Wii also. I mean, for the Wii, all the games were first-party games, like all the best games. But in this case, I think there's just a lot of encouraging
signs. Some of my favorite ones on the Wii were not first-party titles, like No More Heroes, Mad World, Boom Blocks, like, so there were games for the Wii.
But like Call of Duty and like most of the big games of the time, like, did not come on the Wii.
That's true,
right? So but that's not the case here. I mean, Wolfenstein 2 is coming out next year on the Switch.
It's pretty crazy.
Yeah, Doom just came out and the reviews are great.
Yeah, it looks good.
Yeah,
so
it's like lower fidelity, you know, if you're like staring at the textures in the game, but nobody's doing
pretty
that
good. Yeah,
well, the whole game is like running and gunning. You're like running around
you're
the
not
whole time.
Like, whoa, look at the environment.
Yeah.
But I think one thing that I'm thinking about with the future is it's probably going to have a long lifespan if things continue like this. And Nintendo, especially with their handhelds, which this is like in between, like, you know, it's safe to say it's a handheld.
Well, it's both, you know?
Yeah, yeah, it's both. With their handhelds, they've released multiple. I mean, look at the DS. There's like so many different versions of the DS. So I'm curious whether or not there are going to be some major design changes to the Switch over the next couple of years.
Well, how could they really change it? Because it started with the DS and then it went to 3DS and then 2DS.
Yeah, I mean, there's multiple 2DS models and stuff. Like, there's one model that like doesn't fold. It doesn't have the clamshell design, which I don't really like, but I mean, there's multiple sizes, things like that. So like possibly with the Switch, they could come out with like a larger version, or like,
I really doubt it. I really doubt they'll do that. I mean, it's possible, but I don't know. It seems like the Switch as it is now is like the most, and we have one right in front of us, which we're looking at. It's the most minimal arrangement that you could possibly have. There's like no unnecessary components that can be removed. It could be improved at some point, but it doesn't seem like Nintendo to do that, you know?
Despite
the handhelds. Yeah. Well, I mean, look at the consoles. Like, they released a new Nintendo when the Super Nintendo came out, right? They did the same thing with the Super Nintendo. Like, at the very end of the life cycle of the Super Nintendo, they released a new Super Nintendo. It's possible. But the quality of the hardware feels really great. I mean,
it's well built, solid. Yeah.
It feels really solid in your hands.
Especially that's something that you would want like to be concerned about when it's like, you know, a device you're carrying around with you and holding.
One downside though, I think, is that it's not like a clamshell design. I had a Nintendo DS way back in the day and I really liked that you could just
fold it and put it in your pocket.
Yeah, yeah. You just close it and just like put it in your bag and you're done.
Yeah. Whereas with this, you worry about the screen or the components like getting messed up and jostled around. You definitely need to have a case for it if you're carrying it around.
You certainly need a case for it completely. Yeah. If you don't have a case, like, your Switch is going to get fucked up. Exactly. Yeah. So
Analog sticks, the joysticks getting like totally fucked, and just imagine having that happen with your Switch.
I mean you could just swap the Joy-Cons.
Buy Joy-Cons by themselves?
Yeah, sure.
All right.
Yeah, I mean, it's cool that it's all modular, you know. If you have like an issue with one of the controllers like years from now, it's like it's a quick fix.
Yeah,
that's pretty
slick.
Yeah, that's pretty slick. Yeah. That's pretty nice. And I have not even felt the need to purchase the Pro Controller at all, to be honest,
because you do have the thing. The like, not the pro controller, but the one where you can slide on the sides, right?
It includes that. That comes with the console.
Okay, right on.
So yeah, you can plug the Joy-Cons into that and you get like a controller, like a wireless controller.
And you can still just play like, you know, with the Joy-Cons just in each hand freely, right?
Yeah, you can. Actually, that
have
seems...
Have you tried Zelda like that? Can't you like
pull, I have tried
pull
Zelda
back
like
the bow and stuff like that?
I don't know about the bow, but I have played Zelda like that, yeah.
Seems pretty comfortable. Could be like laying upside down with like one arm behind you and in a, just whatever you want.
Most of the game,
I don't usually
most of the games
like
I've been
that.
Playing though have been just in handheld mode.
Yeah.
It's like most of the time when I'm playing. It's with the Joy-Cons connected to the Switch.
Really? You're not like playing with it on the projector much?
No, not as much. Yeah. I'm playing more on it just in handheld. And I've actually heard other people describe this too. It's like they're sitting on their couch, like right in front of the TV, and they're just like playing in handheld mode.
Why do you think that is?
I don't know. I think there's something kind of nice about having the screen just like right there, right in front of you. Maybe it's because the games may perform like a little bit better in handheld mode. I'm not really sure. I mean, I haven't.
They like play in a different resolution, right?
Yeah, they play in 720p in handheld mode. Because
and they play 1080 on projection, right? When you're putting it out to a second display.
If you're docked, then it's docked. 1080p, yes. Yeah. And the display on the Switch is 720p. So it makes sense that games are rendered differently and scaled differently and therefore may perform differently if they're being played in docked mode or in handheld mode.
Interesting.
So, I mean, I played Switch today when I woke up. I went to sleep and just like played Switch before I went to sleep, woke up.
In bed or
whatever.
Woke up,
played Switch. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Just playing
Zelda.
Yeah,
that's pretty
sneet. Yeah.
Sneet. That's... But you were describing playing Zelda on the projector with like surround sound. And
oh,
like,
yeah, that's true. Yeah, yeah. That was like a big thing actually. When I mean, almost all the time when I played in handheld mode, I'm usually using headphones.
Right.
But... when I connected it to my projector and the surround sound system, it was very, very noticeable, like the environmental sounds in particular.
Coming from different directions and just like really feeling like you're in the world.
Yes. That's one of the things that Zelda has like done so damn well is just the ambience.
The ambience.
Yeah.
Oh, man.
It's like you're walking through a forest and you hear like crickets all around you and you can hear like tree branches breaking underneath your feet. And it's just like all these small details create this like incredible sense of immersion.
Yeah, I would say it's probably one of the most immersive game worlds I've ever, you know, played in a game.
Yeah, so it works really well in surround sound as well. Whether it's in dock mode or handheld mode, just, yeah, really, really impressive.
Yeah.
It's great to see Nintendo just be so successful, you know, because I think before the release of the Switch, there was a lot of concern about Nintendo. You know, I mean, they released Super Mario Run on iPhone and a lot of people liked it, but it was not that much of a success because the game was hidden behind a $10 paywall.
Right.
And a lot of people didn't want to pay that.
Yeah.
And the Wii U had been very unsuccessful compared to the Xbox or the PlayStation.
Yeah.
And it just wasn't looking that great for Nintendo. And a lot of people were talking about, you know, how long will Nintendo be around? I mean, that was like a real conversation that people were having.
It was like, is this, you know, is Nintendo sliding like out? Is it going to go the way of Sega or something?
Right. It looked like that might be very possible. And I mean, at the time we were saying things like, you know, oh, Nintendo's not going to have a hit console. Like they might as well just release like Mario and Zelda and everything on mobile.
Yeah.
And just like do that because everyone's on cell phones.
Yeah.
And it's amazing. Like how much has changed in like 1 year time.
Yeah. Nintendo seems to know what they're doing.
Totally.
Or, they're brilliantly fumbling around, figuring it out step by step.
It doesn't seem like a coincidence with this like
it really
string
seems
of,
like yeah. like with like it seems like a lot of the things that like have seemed like missteps on their part, maybe not the Wii U, but certain at least within the last, you know, year or so have been carefully thought out choices, like the stocking issues of the NES Mini or NES Classic or whatever.
Let's go through a list of the hits. I mean, there's the NES Classic, there's the SNES Mini, there's the Switch, and now there's Zelda Breath of the Wild and Mario Odyssey.
Yeah.
And that's like four massive wins in the span of like 1 year.
Killing it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
All the buzz is there.
So good to see them not, you know, not going anywhere anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm curious if other big players in the games industry like Sony or like Microsoft may try to replicate some of the success of the Switch by creating some kind of portable solution or maybe creating some kind of bridge from the Xbox
or the PlayStation 4. Microsoft did the Kinect. PlayStation had the Move or whatever it was. I mean, you know, trying to cash in on like the Wii, the original Wii success.
Yeah.
So it's very possible to see some sort of move on their part.
Yeah. I mean, if there really is some kind of like mobile gaming, you know, revolution here with like the Switch.
Yeah.
Because prior to the Switch, I think like everyone, I mean, I've worked in the mobile games industry for like 7 years now, and pretty much we have all, you know, in the mobile games industry have all been like convinced that like the future is phones.
Yeah.
Because everyone has a phone and phones are really powerful.
Yeah.
And there's so many games. The library is so big. The costs are so low.
Right.
It seems like phones are like the inevitable future of mobile gaming.
Yeah.
And now the success of Switch like really calls that into question.
Yeah. It's like, okay, well, at least like, I mean, that was looking like that was the way to go for like now. For the immediate future, and the Switch shows that at least there's another lifespan of like 5 years or so before, you know, handheld goes away.
Well, if that's the case, then we're in a new world, and then I wonder how Sony and Microsoft will respond to that.
Yeah. So
before we wrap this up, what games have you been playing recently?
Well, I'm looking forward to checking out Oxygen Not Included. I just bought that. And yesterday I was checking out a game called Cave Blazers. It's like a roguelike kind of cave exploring game, similar to Risk of Rain or something like that.
Just it's like Spelunky?
Spelunky, more like Risk of Rain, but with like the Spelunky setting.
Did you play much of Spelunky?
Not really. I haven't.
Man, you should play that.
Yeah, I'll get
that's
into
like
it.
One of the best indie games, I think, of all time.
And yeah, played through Emily is Away, and
I played that too. Yeah. Pretty interesting.
And that's about it, other than, you know, getting my PUBG fix.
Yeah,
we've haven't had time for Zelda for like maybe a week and a half or something. So
okay, yeah, I've been playing Zelda, I've been playing Mario, I've been playing PUBG, I've been playing a lot of damn games. Yeah. Now that I'm like going through the list, also been playing Shadow Tactics, which has been kind of cool. It's like a ninja assassin game. Emily is Away, played that. Very short game, about 30 minutes, but pretty enjoyable. And Sonic Mania.
Yeah.
Yeah, been playing that. That's not like getting a ton of my focus right now because I'm just like overwhelmed with so many things on the Switch in particular. And just like the depth of these games. I mean, I could just be playing like Zelda alone or Mario alone and just be content
like
with
a
that.
Month or two.
Exactly. Or, yeah, right. So these are all pretty like big commitment games, I guess. And then I've still got a couple which I want to finish. Cuphead, I'm on the second to final boss.
Right.
Still haven't finished that game. And Shadow of War, I'm like right at the end of that as well.
Right on.
But I just had a conversation with Leon about this the other day about how after being away from, you know, achieving a certain level of mastery in those games, like in Cuphead, like I'm like right at the end of the game, and having to go back to it after several weeks of not playing it, I've like lost some
and
of those
skills.
Some of the muscle memory is like gone, and I've got to like rebuild that to like overcome that last challenge in the game.
So
but I'm definitely going
to
do that.
If you play that game, stick with it to the end or it's going to take longer, right?
Yeah, I mean, it probably would have been a good idea for me to finish.
Just push through it.
Yeah, to finish Cuphead and finish Shadow of War like before I get into the next thing.
Right.
But I think that the pull of Mario Odyssey was just too great.
Too great.
Just couldn't do it.
Yeah. Cool.
Well, thanks for listening to the podcast. We hope you enjoyed this discussion about Mario, Zelda, and the Switch. We're really looking forward to seeing what comes up. If you are interested in checking out more episodes of the podcast, you can find it on Apple Podcasts or wherever you listen to podcasts. You can also download or stream them directly from our website at chundugaming.com. Also, if you enjoyed this podcast, we would really appreciate a review from you on Apple Podcasts. It really does help visibility a lot. Thanks for listening.
Thanks.